Dave's jumping on me. I'll call you, Addy.
Nobody
wonder why a big city fellow like myself has been asked to come up here. I hope you're not disappointed. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here and be welcomed in your home like this. What happened was I shared a little experience drinking Hogue one night in a meeting, and Steve's dad, Gene, must have overheard something I said. He was in detox at the time, so that explains maybe why I got invited here tonight.
It is a real pleasure and an honor to be here. I know that this is y'all's home,
and I feel real comfortable here, and I thank you all for the opportunity to be here, and hope that God can carry a little message through me tonight. My sponsor says if I eat enough spiritual food, I can vomit it up, and maybe somebody will hear something. I'd like to talk tonight a little bit about me and what's happened with me, how I came to be here, and some of the changes that have happened in my life. Oftentimes when you go to a speaker's meeting, you hear so many people talking about basically histories of what they went through when they were drinking, and thanks to the grace of God and the experience of some people who've been around much, much longer than me, I've realized that, as it says in the big book, the purpose of me sharing with you one-on-one or in a group setting is to share my experience, strength, and hope. We've all had the same experiences drinking and using, and we know about those things, so hopefully we won't waste too much time talking about all the stuff we already know. I started drinking and using when I was very young. I was about 8 years old, first time I ever got drunk. By the time I was 12, I'd advanced into a variety of drugs that you like to smoke, and then after that, I rapidly went into any and everything. Alcohol was the one constant in my life through the time that I was using and drinking. I went through the same old experiences most everybody that's ended up in this room has gone through. I've spent time in jail. I've spent time on the streets. I've lied, cheated, and stole from everybody that I ever came in contact with. I was alienated from my family. I never had a true friend. And I was basically a hopeless, lonely individual. And that started a long, long time before I ever started drinking or using drugs. And I found at some point, I guess when I was 8 years old, that when I took that drink, that loneliness and that hopeless feeling and that restlessness, irritability, and discontent that I had with my life felt a little bit better. All of a sudden, I was a part of a group that I wanted to be a part of. I was accepted, and I felt like I was liked, and it was the ease and comfort that came from the alcohol that made that possible. At some point in my life, the alcohol wasn't enough. I still found myself restless, irritable, and discontent, and I had to look for other things. What I didn't realize was that for the first 5 years or so that I actually started trying to do something about my problem, the big misconception I had, and I'm real grateful today through my sponsor and the people that I fellowship with in Atlanta, informed me that although the problems I had with alcohol and drugs was what initially got me here, that those weren't the problems that I was really suffering from, and that the goal of coming here was not really to become abstinent. It was just for me to become happy, joyous, and free, so I'm not restless, irritable, and discontent, and looking for some ease and comfort from something outside of myself. And I think that's the greatest thing that's happened to me to this point in my life, is that some folks made that real clear to me based on my experience and their experiences, and I understood that. And that's only through God's grace that I understood anything that had to do with getting better. You know, I tried for many years to change my situation, change the way that things were going in my life. I didn't like being the person that I was. I just didn't know what to do about it. And the first thing that I could come up with was use my willpower. You know, I could see that in my life, if I made a decision to do something and I followed up a little bit, that I usually got pretty good results. So I thought, well, heck, I got to the point where I thought I might have a problem with alcohol. I might have a problem with drugs. You know, it's pretty evident I was sitting in prison. You know, by the time I suspected I had a problem, I thought, well, you know, I just won't do that anymore. And I tried that, and that lasted about 35 minutes. And I was restless, irritable, and discontent again, and I went looking for that ease and comfort, and I went to the only normal thing I knew, and that was intoxication of some sort or the other. And it became real apparent after continued attempts that my willpower was not worth a darn as far as the alcohol and drugs was concerned. It didn't matter if it was still working in other areas of my life. And I tried and I tried and I tried, and I kept on getting the same old results. I would end up looking for some ease and comfort. I'd go and find it. I'd end up in jail, or I'd end up living on the streets, or I'd end up stealing, or I'd end up lying or cheating. And the same thing kept happening. So it was pretty evident that as far as alcohol and drugs were concerned, my willpower was of absolutely no use. I made many decisions in the morning with a hangover saying that I was not going to do that again. And I was tired of the way things were going. I was tired of being broke. I was tired of throwing up all over myself. I was tired of waking up on the bathroom floor the next morning. And I'd tell myself I wasn't going to do it again. And the course of the day, I'd work hard and I'd do what I'd had to do during the day. And the end of the day would come and I'd say, you know, I deserve it. I think I'll just stop and have two beers. Next thing I know, it'd be 4 o'clock in the morning. They'd be kicking me out and I'd be wondering what the heck happened. And I'd go home and my mother, my girlfriend, or whoever I was sponging off of at the time would say, what happened? You know, you told me you were going to be home by 7 o'clock. And I may make any number of excuses, but the truth of the matter was, I had no idea what happened. I really meant to go and have two drinks. I really meant to get home by 7 o'clock and have dinner with my family. I really meant to go home and do the things that I needed to do. I really meant to be able to get in bed by 10 or 11 o'clock at night so I could get up in the morning and go to work, if I was fortunate enough to have a job at the time. So when my willpower didn't work, I found myself in a pretty terrible predicament. I thought, well, you know, this isn't working, so what I better do is I better get some more knowledge. See, because I could see in my life that if I took the opportunity and the effort to learn a little bit something and try to put into practice whatever knowledge I had obtained, that I could get some positive results from that. So I thought, well, this willpower stuff didn't work as far as the alcohol and drugs is concerned. Maybe I'll try my next favorite tool. And that was my knowledge and my intellect. So I started visiting high-priced alcohol and drug treatment centers, and I learned an awful lot about how long it took for alcohol or drugs to get out of my system. I found out a whole lot about the disease concept. I found out a whole lot about what I needed to do if I ever started feeling like I was going to fall off the face of the earth and needed a drink. And I learned a whole bunch of knowledge about how alcohol affected me and about what the problem was. Because at that point in my life, the problem was the drugs and the alcohol. Didn't want to face up to any responsibility, so I could blame it on something outside of myself. So I learned as much about it as I could, and then I proceeded to go out and get drunk again. And I did that 3 or 4 times. I've been through 4 treatment centers. The first one I went to was a real expensive place. It took insurance and the whole works, and then the one I went to after that, the judge told me I had to go to, and then the one I went to after that, it was a little bit less high. For it myself, and the one I finally ended up in was a 7-month program that was operated by the Department of Human Resources, and it was basically like being in jail, with the exception I can maybe walk down the street once in a while and buy a pack of cigarettes. So I learned an awful lot in the course of those years of going through that about alcoholism, about addiction, about how it worked, about, you know, the problem. But looking back, the one thing I never learned is what was the solution to the problem that I was suffering from. You know, nobody told me how to live my life. Nobody told me what I needed to do in order to get better. But they gave me a world of information about what the problem was. And that's the way that it worked for me. And I had all this knowledge, and that was the big favorite weapon that I was going to use to change my life. And at some point, the idea crossed my mind that since I had all this knowledge, I was an educated drunk, and that I could go out there and I could try it, and it was going to be different this time. And that's what I did. And it was not different. It was the same. The same results always happened. I ended up back in jails. I ended up living back on the streets. I ended up not being able to associate with my family or friends. And I ended up doing the same old thing that always happened. So my two favorite weapons that I used to prove to the world just how important I really was, my willpower and my knowledge, had absolutely no effect on the alcohol and the drugs and on correcting that part of my life. And I was still tired of being the person that I'd always been. I was tired of doing the things that I always did. And I was pretty much scared to death because the two things that I used in every endeavor that I ever undertook didn't work. And I didn't know what I was going to do. And I was scared to death that I was going to run my car into a phone pole, or I was going to get shot in a dope deal, or I was going to OD or drink myself to death. And I was scared to death. And that held me sober for about 30 days, and then that idea crossed my mind, you know, that it could be different this time, that I could control the amount that I took this time, and that things were just going to work out much differently. Because, see, I had 30 days under my belt now, and that was enough to constitute a defense against the same old thing that always happened. I knew what to look out for. This scary thing was that fear, you know, my doctor told me when I got out of the hospital for hepatitis that if I ever drank or used drugs again, that I would die, period. And I said, thanks for the information, doctor, and I went and had a beer. You know, so all the fear that I had that I was going to spend the rest of my life in prison or end up dead somewhere wasn't enough to change that thought in my mind that it was going to be different this time or that I could control it or that I could do it successfully. So fear didn't work. My willpower didn't work. Knowledge didn't work. I had done 90 meetings in 90 days, probably 90 times, and all the human power and the love and the support that came from these rooms was not enough to take that idea out of my head. When I was sitting at home alone and that obsession hit me to use it or to drink, chances of me calling one of you people, no matter how many times it was suggested, was pretty slim. You know, I followed a lot of suggestions and I did a lot of things that people told me, but when I was by myself and when I was feeling restless, irritable, and discontent, and I needed some ease and comfort, the normal thinking that I had was that alcohol and drugs was going to give me that, and that's what I went to. And every time the same thing kept happening over and over and over. I was real fortunate this last go-round. I met some folks who said all the same things that I just said to you. And it all rang a bell with me. It made a lot of sense. And that left me with a big question, well, what the heck did you do? You know, I kept seeing these folks. And they were not in any better financial shape than I was, and they were happy, and they didn't care less, and they spent a lot of time helping other people. And they always had smiles on their faces, and I always thought, these folks are crazy, or they're full of junk, and they got a bottle hidden out there in the car, and they're going to get drunk as soon as they leave here. And I never, you know, I mean, that's just the keen alcoholic mind that I operate under. I was real suspicious. But it kept happening over and over and over. So I finally got wise, and I said, well, you know, if I really want to know, then what I better do is I better ask these folks what the heck's going on. And they said, you know, the problem that you suffer from is the same one that I suffer from, and what happens to me is this. According to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and according to folks who've been around much longer than I have, what makes me different than the guy who says he's going to stop and have two drinks after work and then go home? What makes me different from this person is the fact that I have an allergic reaction to alcohol. And that it's like if I ate it, if I was allergic to tuna fish and I ate a tuna fish sandwich and I broke out in a rash, well, then that's the rash is how the allergy would show itself. They said what happens when I have an allergic reaction to alcohol or drugs is I have that same allergic reaction, and the way that it shows itself is my body tells me I've got to have more. And that's what made me different. So that made a lot of sense. Well, the obvious solution to that problem is I just don't eat a tuna fish sandwich, and I just don't drink, and I just don't do any dope. And it sounded real, real simple. I'd heard that before, though, see. People had told me, just don't drink and go to meetings. And I had tried that, and I was unable to do that. You know, the analogy that they use with me is if I go to a meeting for 90 meetings in a row, 90 days in a row, with a bunch of people who know how to play the piano, just because I go to 90 meetings doesn't mean I'm automatically going to know how to play the piano. I'm going to have to take a little action. I'm going to have to learn what steps they took to learn how to play the piano. And I'm going to have to use their experience, strength, and hope on playing the piano in order to learn how to do it. But just going to a meeting was not going to be enough for me to learn how to live sober and how to just not drink. Because, see, the problem was, although it was real logical that if I had an allergy to alcohol or drugs that I just wouldn't do any, my mind didn't work that way. That at some point, I would suffer from the obsession of the mind that tells me it's going to be different this time. I can control it, or I'm going to be able to do it successfully. And that no amount of willpower, no amount of logic, no amount of knowledge, no amount of human power, no amount of fear was going to be enough to take that idea out of my head. And that meant that I suffered from a hopeless state of mind and body that they talk about in the Big Book. And when they revealed that to me, I understood exactly what that first step meant when they said the word powerless. Powerless means you're going to die if you don't stop doing what you're doing. And that you don't have the power or the means available to stop. And that if you don't look for a power greater than yourselves, then you're going to die, period. And that's what they told me. And that's what I was willing to believe at that point in my life, because I had proven it to myself over and over and over by trying every means available to change the way my life was going. So I really didn't have much of a choice. That's how they told me. That's when I got willing. I went out there and proved to myself I couldn't do it. And it's real unfortunate that some folks had to go to the extent that I went, and some even further. The good news is you don't have to be one of those people. you can be one of those people who's a little bit smarter than I was and listens a little bit, follows a few suggestions. So the problem is I'm powerless. They tell me in the second step that the solution is power. And I have to be willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself that's going to restore me back to sanity. Now that don't mean I have to have an 8x10 glossy of what this power is. It doesn't mean I have to have a resume that says what he's going to do and what he's not going to do. And it doesn't mean that I have to have a great amount of faith or an understanding of what that power is. All it says is that I'm willing to believe that there is something out there and that I'm not it. And that made it real simple for me, see, because I was beat up in church and, you know, I didn't like to believe what they told me and I didn't listen to what they told me and I couldn't understand why they would tell me that and then make me pay them for it. I didn't understand why my dad told me when I was 6 years old that the reason why I had to get up and go to church was because it was good for business for him to be seen there. I didn't like the fact that when I was 11, 12 years old playing on the church basketball team that their biggest priority was how many Mercedes they had in the parking lot and if our church, and if our basketball team beat the Catholics. I didn't understand all that stuff and I didn't want anything to do with that God. I didn't want to do anything, didn't want anything to do with those hypocrites. I would do anything in the world except be one of those hypocrites, so I spent my life being agnostic or atheist or whatever you want to call it. Bottom line is I was unwilling to believe there was a power greater than myself. I remember my mother telling me when I was 16 years old that the reason why you keep drinking and doing more dope is to put to sleep the idea that God has a plan for you and you're going in direct opposition to it. And I laughed and I said, you're crazy. You don't have any idea what you're talking about. And I spent the rest of my life using and drinking to try to forget exactly what the truth was, and that was the truth. And I knew that I was supposed to be doing something that I wasn't doing. And every time I didn't do it, I got restless, irritable, and discontent, and I had to start looking for some ease and comfort. And I'd start finding that ease and comfort in alcohol and drugs, and I'd end up broke or in jail or living on the streets, and the same old things kept on happening. So I spent the rest of my using career trying to forget that idea, which had been spoken finally out loud in words. So the second step tells me the solution to the problem I'm suffering from is to be willing to believe that there is something out there that's going to restore me back to sanity. You know, I thought that meant that I was going to have to stop doing all those wild and crazy things that I always did. But they explained it to me that what that really means is, see, the definition of sanity is wholeness of mind and makes decisions based on the truth. Well, the other side of that is insanity, which is less than wholeness of mind and unable to see the truth. And that made it real simple for me, see, because all my life, as far as alcohol and drugs were concerned, I was unable to see the truth. The Big Book tells me that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol, and that the sensation is so elusive that while I know it's injurious, or that it's killing me, that I can't differentiate the truth from false. And that's what that sanity is not knowing the truth. The insanity is not knowing the truth from the false. I can't see the truth. So I need to be willing to believe that there's something out there that can help me to see the truth. And when I'm willing to believe that, then it puts me on the spot. I get to make a decision on whether I'm willing to pursue that power or not. And, you know, the third step, I often hear people talking about turn over this, turn over that, turn over this, turn over that, and taking it back the next day and taking it back 2 days later and having the same old results. They explain it to me that, you know, the third step says made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. The important words in that step are made a decision. You know, if there's three birds on a wire and one of them decides to fly away, how many birds are left on the wire? Well, there's still three birds left because all he did was made a decision. He didn't take any action. If I make a decision to go on a vacation, I have to take some action. I have to pack my suitcases. I have to save some money to go. I have to make hotel reservations. Or else I've just made a decision to go and I'm still sitting in Atlanta, Georgia. And that's the way that it works. And the third step is I make a decision to find out what my will and what my life is. And then I can turn those things over in steps 6 and 7. So I make a decision in the third step, but that decision is only as good as the action that I put behind it. And that brings me up to the action part of this program, which starts in step number 4. And that's where I got to go to work, and I got to find out what the causes and conditions really are for my alcohol and my drug problem. You know, the alcohol was just a symptom. And what happens if I do the 4th step according to the directions in the Big Book, then I'm going to see what goods in my life or what part of myself is damaged or unsaleable. They use the analogy or comparing it to a business inventory. And a business inventory's purpose is to take stock of exactly what it is I've got in stock that's damaged or that's not marketable. You know, and it's the same thing in a personal moral inventory. It's finding out the truth about what part of me is affected by all these terrible things that y'all have done to me. And when I look at each situation honestly, and if I do it according to the directions, I'm going to find out some real basic things. If I'm ticked off at my mother, and if I write down what it is that my mother did that ticked me off, and if I look at what part of my natural instincts for security or for health or for my social relations or my sex relations, if I look at what part of my life is affected by that situation, I'm going to realize a couple of real basic things. First of all, I'm not ticked off at my mom. I'm ticked off at what she did. Second of all, I'm not really ticked off at what she did. I'm ticked off at the way that what she did affected me and what part of my natural instincts was affected by that. And when I can look at that, then I have to realize that guess what? It's my fault. It's not hers. And I have to start to look at exactly what it was that I did that made me be affected in that manner. And I have to do the same thing with my fears. If I'm scared of the dark, I have to look at why I'm scared of the dark and what part of it is of me that's affected by the dark and what my part of it is in that fear. See, because all resentment is an incorrect judgment. And all fear is an incorrect belief. And all the harms that I've done to everybody else in my life is nothing more than incorrect actions. And once I lay those things out on the table and I can see what those things are through doing a fifth step with somebody who's been around much longer than me and who's done this process, then I can look at those things and I know exactly what my will in my life is. My will is the way that I think and what I want out of life. And my life is all the actions that I took in order to get those things. And when I can look at those things honestly and see what the truth is, guess what? My sanity's been restored. I can see the truth about my alcohol and my drug addiction. I can see that the alcohol and drugs were just a precipitating factor that got me in these rooms. And that the real thing that caused that was the fact that I'm selfish, self-centered, dishonest, I'm self-seeking, I'm frightened, and I don't know how to live life.
Almost enough.
Well, the good news is that there's more steps behind that. See, I can ask God to take that stuff away from me. I've already made a list in my four steps of what the eighth step wants me to do, and that's list the harms that I've done to other people. And I can have the opportunity, based on my willingness, to go and make amends to those people. Now, I've told everybody I ever came into contact with before I got in these rooms and understood what it meant to be here that I was sorry. Everybody pretty much knew that. I proved that daily. They explained to me that this making amends stuff was a lot more than just going to all the people that I thought I may have hurt in my life and tell them I was sorry, because if I'd really hurt them, they probably already knew that. And so that was not real big news to me. I didn't like the fact that that meant that amends means to repair damage. Because see, that means that I might have to go back to jail. That means that I might have to spend all the money that I go to work and earn to pay back people that I've hurt and stolen from. That might mean that I have to change the way that I live so I don't continue doing those things. So there's a lot more to it than just that. And then we get to 10, 11, and 12, and that's, you know, oftentimes I hear people call those the maintenance steps. All step 10 is working steps 4 through 9 on an as-needed basis. I can do it every day, I can do it every week. You know, the thing that I never understood in working the steps was that I was learning the process, and that it was a process that I used every single day in my life. And it's a real simple process. If the guy on TV tells me that Tide laundry detergent is going to make my clothes whiter and brighter than any other detergent in the world, and if I'm willing to believe that, and if I take a little action based on that belief, and I go to the store and I buy a little bit of Tide, and I take it home and I wash my clothes with it, and my clothes come out white, and I see the results of what this guy told me on TV, and I see those results are true, then guess what? I develop faith in Tide detergent. And that's the same way this program works. You know, these folks told me at some point that if I was willing to believe that what they were telling me was true, and that there really was a power greater than myself out there, and that based on that willingness to believe, if I was willing to take a little action and to pursue that power, and to try to make that power the driving force in my life, that I would see the results from that. And when I saw the results of that, then if I continued to put that process into practice, at some point I would develop faith. And that at some point I would develop trust in that process. And the analogy that they taught me, which was so overwhelming, was when I was a small kid,
I used to be afraid of the dark, and I would walk into a dark room. And at some point, my parents told me, you know, all you have to do is reach up and flip this light switch on, and the lights will come on. Well, I was willing to believe that. And next time I walked into a dark room, I took a little action, and I flipped on that light switch. And guess what? The lights came on. It didn't happen that often in my later using days because I didn't ever pay my electric bill. But anyway, I saw the results of flipping that switch, and the light came on. And the next few times I walked into a dark room, maybe I had to stop and think about it and wonder if maybe that light was going to come on and maybe that light wasn't. But at some point, I saw and believed that that happened every single time that I walked into a dark room. I'd seen those results, and I continued to put that process into action. And guess what? Now when I walk into a dark room, I have absolute faith and trust in the idea that that light's going to come on when I flip that switch. So what happened was I was willing to believe. I took some action based on that belief. I saw the results of that action and the change that came from that action, and today I try to put that same process into action. And that process works in any problem, in any predicament that I may find myself in. And when I do that and continue to do that, at some point I develop faith. And at some point, working this program will be just like it is when I walk into a dark room right now. I will automatically put the principles of this program into practice, just like I automatically reach up and put that light switch on. And that's what this program is really all about. See, I need to be that person today who was like my parents. When they walk in and they're scared of the dark, I need to say, hey, look, all you got to do is reach up here and flip on the light, and the light will come on. All you got to do right now is be willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself. I don't care what about your background in religion is. I don't care about whether you think you can have faith or not. Are you convinced of those three points? Are you powerless? Do you have an obsession of the mind? Do you have an allergy of the body? Once you give into that obsession, then you're powerless. And if you're powerless, are you willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself? And if the answer to that is yes, then you've got a decision to make. Do I want that power or do I not want it? And that decision is only as good as the action that I put behind it. And I'm real, real grateful today for the people that spoke up and shared that with me, that were like my parents when I walked in that dark room and they told me there was a light. And I'm real, real grateful for the people in this room who not only offer me support as I learn this process and as I continue to go through this process and as I do the things that I need to do to develop faith in this process, but they also give me a choosing ground, see, because it tells me that nothing can so much ensure my sobriety as working with another alcoholic. And I'm real grateful today that God gave me a big mouth and I like to use it because sometimes people listen. And I'm real grateful that God gave me the intelligence that didn't work as far as alcohol and drugs are concerned, because sometimes when you try to BS me, I'll know what the difference is, because I've been there. And I'm real, real grateful to the God of my understanding today. You know, I hear people often say, my higher power, whom I choose to call God, my higher power is God, period. It says it in black and white in the book. You know, I used to hear people talk about the doorknob could be your higher power, or the coat rack in the back of the room. Well, if all my human intellect and all the human power that was available to me in the form of psychiatrists, psychologists, and people who've been to school for 30%, 90% of their life couldn't help me, what makes me think a doorknob can? All I have to do is be willing to believe. All I have to do is be convinced that I am not the power that I thought I was. All I have to do is be convinced that I cannot do this on my own. And if I'm one of those people that wants to be hard-headed, the old-timers say, if you live, we'll get you. Because that's the choices that I have. They're real clear. I can go on to the bitter end, or I can accept spiritual help. And I often find myself bumping heads with people because they don't like that G word. And they want to call it all different kind of names, and they want to call it this, and they want to call it that. But the reality is this. If I'm one of those people, and I've tried everything, and nothing else worked, what have I got to lose except my life? It's real simple. And I don't have to put a definition on it. I don't have to have a great amount of faith in it. I don't have to have an understanding of what it is, because it's promised to me that I will have a spiritual awakening as a result of those steps, period. And that the consciousness of my belief in that power will surely come to me, period. You know, I don't come here with faith. I don't know anything about it when I get here. The only faith that I ever had was in my reasoning and my intelligence or my good looks or this or that or the other, and they all let me down. Because I didn't know what to do with them. It promises me You know, we read the promises at every meeting. And for the longest time, I gauged my sobriety in my life on how much of those promises had come true in my life. Well, I've since learned that those promises come on page 83 and 84, the directions on how to work this program, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they come as a direct result. It says if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, this phase of our development is making amends in step number 9.
Flip the tape. Dee 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 dee.